Well, hello there, everyone. I'm Dr. Leslie Kernison, board-certified geriatrician and founder of the website betterhealthwhileaging.net, and this is the Better Health While Aging video podcast, where we discuss common health problems that affect people over age 60 and the best ways to prevent and manage those problems. We also often address common concerns and dilemmas that come up with aging parents and other older loved ones, like what to do if you're worried about falls or safety or memory or even the quality of an older person's healthcare. In this episode, I am going to talk about what older adults should know about vitamin D. Now, for various reasons, vitamin D is one of those vitamins that has become really popular, both among consumers and also among some health providers. So lots of older adults are taking it, and many health providers also recommend it. But how much vitamin D should an older person be taking? And what can you expect it to do for your health? That is what I am going to cover in today's episode. Because actually, in recent years, there's been a fair amount of really well-done clinical research published on this topic. And what it actually suggests is that some vitamin D supplementation can definitely be good, but that higher doses may not be. And really, we're not seeing any evidence that they are helpful. So, in this video, I'm going to break this down for you. I'm going to cover the basics of vitamin D. I'm going to tell you what to know about vitamin D deficiency. I'm going to take you through the research so you can understand what the latest good research is showing us. And then I'll give you my recommendations on what I think most older adults should do about taking vitamin D for their health. And so really specifically, I'll be covering what is vitamin D and what does it do? What is vitamin D deficiency? Why have there been controversies about vitamin D? The randomized controlled trials that are suggesting that high doses of vitamin D don't help and might even be risky, and my recommendations for how much vitamin D to take in later life. So, first of all, what is vitamin D? So, vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin that plays a key role in calcium metabolism and bone health. And so, because it's fat-soluble, that means it can accumulate in the body, and if you don't take it every day, your levels don't drop right away. And then calcium and also phosphorus are minerals that are really key to bone health. Vitamin D also helps the gut absorb calcium, and it helps regulate those blood levels of calcium and phosphorus. So that's the main thing that we know about the effect of vitamin D. But in recent years, there's been a lot of research also to understand its other roles in health, because about 20 years ago, when researchers started looking into it in more depth, they realized that vitamin D receptors are present in almost all tissues of the body. So that means that vitamin D is having lots of other effects, and those effects and how they specifically work are still being worked out. And so what they believe at this time is that vitamin D is not only involved in bone health, but is also involved in managing the immune system, inflammation, cell growth, muscle function, and much more. So how do we get vitamin D? Vitamin D is interesting because unlike most vitamins, we actually have two options to obtain it in the body. So most vitamins, you actually have to take them in to your body by some way. But with vitamin D, one way that we can get it is that our skin is actually able to synthesize vitamin D, the version vitamin D3. There are two closely related versions, D2 and D3. They get metabolized by the body into the same active component. So your skin can synthesize vitamin D3 in response to sun exposure, or you can ingest vitamin D2 or D3. It's not naturally present in most foods, but it is present in fatty fish, in a few other animal products, although not usually in as high quantities, and in some mushrooms. Vitamin D is also often taken in food because it's a very common supplement that they fortify foods with. So for instance, milk is often fortified with additional vitamin D. Or vitamin D can be taken as an oral supplement in either the D2 or the D3 form. And experts believe that D3 is a little bit easier for the body to absorb and make use of. So how much vitamin D do we need? How do we know if we have enough vitamin D? This kind of brings up the question of how do we measure vitamin D in the body and whether we are getting enough vitamin D? So it turns out that we can check this in a blood test. And it's usually reported in either nanograms per milliliter or in nanomoles per liter. It's really important to know that there are these two units because otherwise you can get confused about which level we are talking about. And in a moment, I'll show you the kind of conversion between the two. In most cases in the blood, what we do is we measure a form that's called 25-hydroxyvitamin D. So basically, I'm not going to go into a whole biochemistry lesson right now, but the body takes in vitamin D, D2 or D3, synthesized by the skin or orally, and then the liver metabolizes it and adds a hydroxy, that's an OH group, in the 25 position. And that's a more stable form of vitamin D that can float around the body for a while. And then when the body wants to use vitamin D, it also sends that 25 hydroxy to the kidneys, which adds another OH group, that's the 125 hydroxy form, and that's the active form that can act on the receptors of the body. So usually we're checking the 25-OH. It's also called form of vitamin D. And what is normal or optimal? So this is when we get into controversy and debates that have been going on for decades at this point. This has been quite hotly debated. So in 2011, the Institute of Medicine, which is now has now been renamed the National Academy of Medicine, they did an extensive review and they said that the level of 20 to 40 nanograms per milliliter, they thought that was adequate. Now, I'm showing you here on my slide the conversion. That is equal to 50 to 100 nanomoles per liter. So it's really important if you are ever reading research about vitamin D or even listening to somebody talk about vitamin D levels, it's important to know whether they are using the unit format that I will mostly be using in this presentation, which is nanograms per milliliter. And that's the one that I see used most often clinically in the United States versus 50 to 100, which is kind of more of a international standard. So the nanograms per milliliter unit is another form that is sometimes used in research papers or probably in some countries abroad. Now, if you want to convert between the two, I have found online a website that can help you do that conversion, and I will post a link to that website in the show notes for this episode so that you can have that to use. So later on in this episode, I'll be taking you through some of the research that helps us, you know, consider this question of what should be the optimal level. But for many people, it is going to be between 20 to 40 nanograms per milliliter. That is what the National Academy of Medicine said in 2011. And actually, as I'll explain, based on the recent research, I think that's still a reasonable range to consider as normal. Now, there are other mainstream medical groups that have in the past said they thought at least 30 nanograms per milliliter would be good. And then I know that there are certain groups of providers, I believe especially among certain functional medicine providers, some of the other kind of what we might call more alternative medicine providers, they have advocated for higher levels. They believe that 50 to 80 nanograms per milliliter is a good range. I think especially after reviewing the research, that is not a good idea. You can make your decision after you watch my talk, but that is part of what we are working with a range. Now, there's an important caveat that I have to make whenever we talk about vitamin D levels, and that is that you should know that multiple expert guidelines have said over the past several years that providers should not routinely check vitamin D levels for health maintenance or for health preventions. That they should, these levels should only be checked if people have a particular symptom or a disease that warrants it. So I am going to be talking about levels to a certain extent, and at the same time, most older adults probably don't need to have their levels checked because it's really been after a lot of reviewing of the evidence, several expert groups have said that they don't believe it's something that should be done, that it's kind of overuse of medical care and also not useful because then they say that we don't really have the right research to understand how to adjust vitamin D intake to hit a certain level. And again, I'm going to be sharing some of that research with you in this talk. So the Endocrine Society is a well-respected international group that just in June of 2024 released updated guidelines about vitamin D for prevention. And so they also agreed that one should not routinely check vitamin D levels. So when should one check it? And some of the conditions they mentioned that warrant testing include abnormal levels of calcium or phosphate, bone problems, fragility fractures. So that might include, you know, osteoporosis cases, people with chronic kidney disease, and people who have gut malabsorption syndromes. So let me now talk about vitamin D deficiency. This is something that people have become very interested in over about the last 20 years. When I went to medical school, which is just a little bit over 20 years ago right now, I guess I finished just 21 years ago. There we go. They did not talk about vitamin D deficiency much. It's really something that took off in the early 2000s. So vitamin D deficiency was first identified decades ago as the cause of a condition called rickets. It's a bone problem in children who are malnourished, usually. So it was a problem that was especially seen in developing countries or sometimes in the United States in children who, for whatever reason, were not getting proper nutrition or able to take it in. It can also cause a related bone problem in adults. Children's bones, you know, are growing differently than adult bones, but vitamin D is, again, very important in bone metabolism, and so if levels are really very, very low, it can cause a related bone problem called osteomalacia in adults where the bones, you know, get kind of soft because they aren't properly mineralizing the calcium and phosphate. This is not the same thing as osteoporosis. Osteoporosis is very common in older adults, especially older women. Osteomalacia is not super common, I would say, in adults in general, but can be caused by very low levels of vitamin D. And so for quite a while, this is what was thought of as vitamin D deficiency, you know, some kind of bone problem like this. But then in the early 2000s, health providers began noticing that some adults who were having certain types of symptoms also had very low levels of vitamin D. So they started to check more people for vitamin D levels. And what they found is that many people had vitamin D levels that were below 20, sometimes below 12 nanograms per milliliter. And most of them didn't seem to have particular symptoms, but some of them did seem to have symptoms that maybe were related to this, such as fractures or muscle weakness or trouble walking. Now, the trouble with those kinds of symptoms, especially when it comes to older adults, is that these are very common symptoms in older adults in general. There can be lots of reasons why older adults get fractures, osteoporosis, very common, and maybe vitamin D deficiency is contributing to that. Muscle weakness is another extremely common issue that can come up for older adults, and same with difficulty walking. So this was sort of noticed in the early 2000s. It was also, you know, a concern for people who were not yet in their 60s or older. And this concern started to grow that maybe we had pervasive levels of low vitamin D in our population, and they were driving a lot of health problems. So researchers started to study this. And usually when the research starts, it's observational, which means that they'll kind of look at people and look at their blood tests and see what the blood tests are, see what their health conditions are, and start making associations. So with that work, multiple studies found that low vitamin D levels were correlated with all kinds of poor health outcomes, with cardiovascular disease, with functional decline, with mortality. So this little table right here, I like. It is from the NIH fact sheet on vitamin D for health providers. And part of what I like about it is that it shows the vitamin D levels in both scales right here. So what that observational data found was that, you know, when the level was low, as in below 12 nanograms per milliliter, which is equivalent to below 30 nanomoles per liter, it could lead to rickets in infants and children, osteomalacia in adults. And then in the 12 to 20 level, it, you know, was associated with health problems. So it was considered to be generally inadequate for bone and overall health. And then that over 20 seemed generally adequate. And over 50, they actually noted might be linked to potential adverse events, especially once people got over 60. So that's the NIH fact sheet on vitamin D for right now. So based on these correlations that these low levels of vitamin D were associated with poor health outcomes, many people concluded that the low vitamin D was causing these poor health outcomes. And so hence, if we could raise vitamin D, if we could correct that low level, we would get better health outcomes. So this all led to a surge in the years 2000 in trying to detect and treat low vitamin D. And so whereas it used to be relatively uncommon for health providers to test vitamin D levels, it became quite common, and it became quite common for them to start supplementing people with daily or weekly supplements. But if you have any training in clinical research or epidemiology, you know that a correlation does not mean causation. that there might be other reasons why we are seeing this association. And so what all this initial research meant was that we really needed randomized prospective research studies. So that means where you take a group of people, you randomly assign them to two groups, and half of them get the vitamin D and the others don't, and you see what happens with their health. It became clear that we really needed those studies to know if supplementing with vitamin D was going to improve health outcomes. And the good news is that those studies have finally been completed and the results have been published, which is why I can talk to you about it today. But before that, just to summarize what have been the popular beliefs about vitamin D for, I would say, the last, 10, 15 years. It's been popularly believed that supplementing with vitamin D to raise levels is better for your health. People have proposed this is better for cognitive health, cardiovascular health, cancer prevention, strength, fall prevention, and more. People have also assumed that high doses of vitamin D are safe. That's because often people took high doses or were given high doses in trials, and nothing seemed to obviously go wrong in the short term. So it's become common for people to supplement with daily doses of 2,000 international units, 4,000 international units, or even 5,000, or sometimes even more. Or sometimes people take a high dose once a week or once a month. So what we need to ask ourselves is, has research validated these beliefs? And before I go into that, let me just say a word of what are the official vitamin D recommendations. So as I was saying, people might be taking 2,000 international units or more, but what are the actual recommendations? So again, in 2011, when the National Academy of Medicine reviewed all the research on vitamin D, they recommended an RDI, recommended daily intake, of 600 international units per day for adults, or 800 international units per day for those who were over age 70, so age 71 plus. And they also said at that time they didn't think it was necessary to routinely check blood levels. So those are the basics of vitamin D. And so let me now move on to what have we learned from the research. So first of all, a major, very important trial was published in 2019, which was called VITAL. And in VITAL, they enrolled about 25,000 older adults. They were age 50 or older, and they randomized them to receive either vitamin D, 2,000 international units a day, omega-3 fatty acids, both or neither. And then they were followed both for the development of cardiovascular disease and for cancer. Now, it turned out that in the group, the average level of vitamin D at entry was 31 nanograms per milliliter. And what the results were is they were essentially negative. VITAL found that there was no effect of taking 2,000 international units per day of vitamin D on cancer or cardiovascular disease. And that was actually also true of the omega-3 fatty acids. And then when they do a big randomized trial like this, often there are sub-studies published because now we have this whole data set and the same researchers or collaborators can ask other questions of the data, like, well, what about falls? Were they affected by the supplementation or not? So several sub-studies of VITAL have been published in the last few years, and almost all of them are essentially negative, finding that taking vitamin D did not make a difference in the outcome. So this was true for risk of falls, for incident fractures, for cognitive decline, for prevention of depression. Now, there were a few sub-studies that actually found an effect. So one of them was on incident autoimmune disease. So in this study, they found that the people who had been assigned to take vitamin D did have a little bit less autoimmune disease. And then there was another analysis that was done related to cancer, and it found that although the people who had been assigned to vitamin D didn't have fewer cases of cancer, they had less cancer mortality. They were a little bit less likely to die of cancer if they got cancer. So that's encouraging, but at the same time, given all the hopes that there were for the effect of vitamin D, it was a little sobering to find that there was not more of an effect. And that's not the only big randomized trial. Another randomized trial that was published recently was called D-Health. This one was done in Australia. And in this case, they randomized 21,000 people who were aged 60 to 84. Here it was a monthly dose, a monthly high dose of vitamin D or placebo. And here again, they didn't really get a significant result. Now, in their conclusion, they said it might reduce the incidence of major cardiovascular events. That's because the group randomized to vitamin D did have a little bit fewer cardiovascular events, but the result was not statistically significant. So the difference was not big enough that by the usual standards, they could say, oh, this is not definitely not due to chance. And then there were sub-studies done. And again, no effect was found in terms of reducing mortality, cognition, fracture risk, or there's even a study on erectile function, and that was also not affected by the vitamin D. Now, what about vitamin D to prevent falls? So this has been important to us in geriatrics because initially in the early years, the data was suggesting that taking vitamin D could help prevent falls. And that is such an important topic for us. So for a while, it was even a recommendation from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force that based on this observational data, supplementing with a little vitamin D might reduce falls. And we were making that recommendation. Well, we have had to walk that back. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force actually changed their recommendation several years ago. And that is because the randomized trials not only found that vitamin D was not reducing fall risk, but it even suggested that higher doses of vitamin D might even be associated with increased fall risk. And then there was also a trial called STURDY, which was published in 2022. And in this trial, and I'll take you through it in a moment, they concluded that vitamin D supplementation levels greater than 1,000 international units per day did not prevent falls compared with 200 international units per day, and doses greater than 2,000 international units per day were potentially showing safety concerns. They also concluded that the risk of consequential falls might be increased when vitamin D levels are above 40 nanograms per milliliters. Okay, let me now take you through a few of these studies. So here is STURDY, and again, I will have links to each of these in the related show notes right here. So STURDY was 637 adults age 70 plus, and they specifically enrolled people who had lower vitamin D levels, whose vitamin D levels were 10 to 29, and who were at higher fall risk. And what you can see here is that they that there was no association between absolute achieved 25-hydroxy vitamin D levels and the first fall, and that the risk of consequential falls might be increased with achieved concentrations greater than 40. And that was not the only study that found some concerns with higher doses of vitamin D. Here's another one published in 2016, where they randomized adults to either a low-dose control group receiving 24,000 units of vitamin D3, and there was also a group receiving 60,000 international units of vitamin D3. And what they found is that although the higher doses of vitamin D3 were effective in reaching the threshold of at least 30 nanograms per milliliter of 25-hydroxy vitamin D, they had no effect on lower extremity function, and they were associated with an increased risk of falls compared to 24,000 international units. And so as time accumulated, there were still more studies that would find a sign that the vitamin D supplementation was not helping older adults in the way we thought it would, and that higher levels might even cause a little bit of harm or risk. So I'll have a few more studies in the related links. And then I also want to mention this one right here, because this randomized study also found that vitamin D doses of 4,000 international units per day and 10,000 international units per day resulted in lower bone mineral density compared to 400 international units per day. So that was another concerning finding. So what does this mean the vitamin D research is showing? My take is that the vitamin D research suggests that one needs vitamin D, but maybe not too much. And we see this sometimes. It's almost like a little Goldilocks thing, right? You don't want too little, but you don't want too much. You need the kind of like right middle ground. That is my interpretation of the research and what other geriatricians are coming to conclude as well. Now you may be wondering, well, but should you believe this randomized trial research? I mean, there are so many people who have been saying that more vitamin D is good and higher levels are good. And, you know, maybe the fact that these big randomized trials aren't finding an effect is just, I don't know, do they always find an effect when something is there? And what I would say is, well, we actually often do see an effect with certain interventions. So given the size of these trials and the way they were done, I would expect an effect. And notably, we consistently, when we do these randomized trials, see an effect when we lower people's blood pressure. Lowering blood pressure reduces cardiovascular events. Statins also, even though the public loves to worry about them, statins actually consistently show reductions in cardiovascular events and mortality as well. Furthermore, evidence is more compelling when there are multiple randomized trials confirming a finding or an absence of a finding. And at this point, we have had more than one randomized trial of vitamin D, and we have had more than one trial find some sort of concerning signs as well. So it can be hard to give up on a cherished hypothesis. This was a beautiful idea that we could help older adults and help other people with their health by supplementing them with a lot of vitamin D, but it's really not panning out. And so then we have to sometimes give up on that kind of hypothesis. So just to say a few words briefly about the new Endocrine Society guidelines. So again, they were just published in 2024, Vitamin D for the Prevention of Disease and Endocrine Society Clinical Practice Guideline. I will also post a link to that in the related notes. And what they concluded was that at this point, there is no clear evidence defining an optimal target level of vitamin D for disease prevention. They suggested against routine testing of vitamin D levels, and they concluded that more research was needed to determine optimal vitamin D levels for specific health benefits. So to come back to those popular beliefs about vitamin D that are so common and espoused by some medical experts, supplementing with vitamin D to raise levels is better for your health, and that high doses are safe, the high-quality research does not confirm this. And so if you are one of those many older adults who is thinking about your health and wants to age well and is wondering what vitamins to take or maybe is taking vitamin D, I think it's really important for you to know this. So what should you actually do about vitamin D? So my own recommendation is that I think the recommendation of the National Academy of Medicine from 2011 is actually pretty good. Most older adults should take 800 international units per day of vitamin D3 every day. And why? So first of all, this is an amount that will help most people avoid a level that is below 20 nanograms per milliliter. This amount seems to be safer than taking higher daily doses. And again, there's been no research showing that higher doses benefit older adults, but there have been multiple studies showing a small risk of harms with higher doses of vitamin D supplementation. More recommendations that I have, you probably don't need to have levels checked. And if they are checked, a level in the 20 to 40 nanogram per milliliter range should be fine. Because again, remember, there is no good proof so far from these higher quality studies that higher levels of this are better. I also think it's better to take the smaller daily dose rather than the larger weekly or monthly dose. That's also what the research is kind of hinting at. Now, what if you are one of those people who has been taking high doses of vitamin D? Maybe you heard that it was a good idea to take 2,000 international units a day or 4,000 international units a day, or maybe your doctor recommended this to you. This is certainly something that some health providers have been doing. What should you do next? So first of all, please don't panic. I mean, I think there is a real signal in the randomized trial data that higher doses, you know, can increase the risk of certain problematic health outcomes. And at the same time, the risk for any individual is probably pretty small. So I don't think you should panic. I don't think it's an emergency. I don't think you've ruined your health, but I would recommend considering reducing your vitamin D intake. Now, if you are on vitamin D because your health provider prescribed it, you definitely want to talk to your doctor, especially if you have kidney disease or any kind of medical problem that might affect vitamin D intake or metabolism. And then your options for reducing vitamin D, I would say they include reducing to 600 to 800 international units per day, or you could potentially stop for a certain period of time. You know, the reason why people can take vitamin D, you know, monthly is because, again, it's fat soluble. So it gets absorbed in your fat, which kind of slowly then releases it, especially if you're not continuing to take it in. So another option is to stop for a certain period of time and then resume at a lower dose. We do not have any guidelines right now on how to help people come down if they've been taking a lot of it. So, you know, should levels be checked? Who knows, right? You could just probably stop for a bit and then start taking a regular daily dose and see where you're at after 6 months or so. So That's what I have to share with you today. So to recap what I think are the most important things that I hope you'll take away from this episode, for healthy aging, bone health, and general prevention, I recommend this daily dose of vitamin D, vitamin D3, 800 international units per day. And again, vitamin D is definitely important in the body, but the anticipated health benefits of higher dose vitamin D supplementation have not been seen in randomized trials. We now have lots of data published in the last 5 years. It is not panning out. And some of this data is even suggesting that there might be a small risk of harm for older adults when they take higher doses of vitamin D supplementation. I think it totally makes sense to avoid a very low or even low level of vitamin D. So I'm currently defining those very low as less than 12 nanograms per milliliter, which is equivalent to less than 30 nanomoles per liter. And I think of a, you know, low level as less than 20. So being in that range of like 12 to 20, you know, is a low level as well. And again, there is no good evidence so far that levels need to be higher than 20 to 40 nanograms per milliliter. Furthermore, based on the randomized trial data suggesting that higher doses can be harmful, I would recommend avoiding levels that are over 50 if you can. 50 nanograms per milliliter, which is equivalent to 125 nanomoles per liter. But again, remember, vitamin D levels generally do not need to be checked. So unless you have something like an abnormal level of calcium or phosphate or bone problems, fragility fractures, osteoporosis, kidney disease, malabsorption syndrome, you probably don't need your vitamin D level checked. Almost everyone will reach a level over 20 nanograms per milliliter with a daily supplement of 800 international units per day. So with that, thank you so much for watching. If you found this video podcast helpful, if you're here on YouTube, please go ahead and subscribe. If you have any thoughts about what you watched, go ahead, post a comment. I love seeing your comments. Subscribing does help more people find the channel. So if you've been listening to the audio version of the podcast feed, come take a look at the video. If you get a chance, you'll be able to see my key points in the video being displayed. So thank you once again, and I look forward to seeing you all on a future episode of the Better Health While Aging video podcast.